the city of Cincinnati is on the precipice of what could be a major zoning change. But in public engagement sessions, neighbors have voiced opposition to the plan known as Connected Communities. It will take a council majority to pass. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're going to talk today about Cincinnati's mayor about Connected Communities and hear what you think. We've also gathered audio from those community engagement sessions to reflect various different opinions of opposition and support for the plan. Joining me now are Cincinnati Mayor Avtab Purval. Welcome back, Mayor.
Hey, thanks for having me.
WVXU local government reporter Becca Costello. Thanks for being here, Becca.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
And WVXU general assignment and long-form reporter Nick Swartzell. Welcome back, Nick.
Hey, Lucy.
So, Becca, first explain briefly, what is the Connected Community Plan? What problem is it intended to address?
I'd say it's probably a couple of different problems, but one is a big focus is housing. It's the fact that the city, according to some recent reports, grew in population over the last decade, but lost housing during that time. So obviously that creates a problem. We're bringing more people in, but not bringing in more housing and actually losing housing for folks to live there. As a result, that creates an affordability problem. We can maybe talk later about the difference between capital A affordable and general affordable, because that is kind of a point of confusion in some ways. So it is designed kind of indirectly, maybe is the best word, to affect affordability in the city. And so it is primarily a housing concern, but it does address quite a few other things in terms of central business districts in particular, a way to make it easier to build not just more housing, but more commercial as well, a way to kind of revitalize those neighborhood business districts. It's kind of looking at the zoning code of Cincinnati, which hasn't been updated in a very long time and was originally designed, like many cities in the U.S., as a way to intentionally segregate neighborhoods, both racially and socioeconomically, and it's an attempt to undo some of that damage.
Mayor, there's been a lot of testimony and comments about this plan. You've heard support. You've also heard opposition. Explain why you support the changes this plan would make.
I overwhelmingly support it because we need it. We are in a housing crisis right now. Becca is absolutely right. The good news is our population is growing, but at that same time, you would expect our housing stock to keep pace with that growth or at least stay flat. But unfortunately, in a lot of our neighborhoods, we've actually lost housing. We've lost housing because of the fact that our city is so old and our housing stock, as a result, is so old. And so, unfortunately, there is more people living here and fewer housing units to support those folks. And disproportionately, even though we are growing in population, we are pushing out lower-income folks to some of our collar communities. And unfortunately, as reporting has shown, disproportionately that's affecting our Black community. So displacement is happening because of a lack of housing stock, not just in some of our communities, but really across the city. You know, it's really, really challenging and frustrating that that we are on lists showing that Cincinnati is the number one city in the country, number one for percentage of rate increases in the last few years.
When you say rate increase, you mean rental rate increases?
Rental rate, the percentage of rental rate increases. Redfin just did a study and showed that Cincinnati was number one. Behind us was New York and Seattle. That is absolutely unacceptable. And unfortunately, by design, because our zoning code has not been updated in a very, very long time, we are by design artificially capping the amount of housing supply that we can create because of our antiquated zoning code. And we're doing that by having a majority of the city zoned as single family exclusive. So in a majority of the city, row homes, duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, which, by the way, were historically Cincinnati housing stock. You can walk around Hyde Park and see so many duplexes. But because of the zoning code changes in the 70s, when we were trying to be the suburbs to prevent quote unquote white flight, we made all of those housing typologies illegal. So this is really just trying to get back to what the city's housing typology used to look like, create more supply of housing, specifically in our neighborhood business districts and in our transit corridors, because we need to legalize housing. We need more housing units and more different kinds of housing typologies. And Becca's absolutely right. If a majority of our city is zoned single-family exclusive, making all other housing types illegal, what that does over time is exactly what we see in our city. We are telling people you cannot live in this neighborhood unless you can afford the most expensive kind of housing, which is single-family housing. And over time, that has led to segregation and concentrations of poverty. So no doubt, housing is the top priority for connected communities or zoning reform, but it will have a massive impact on integrating the city, deconcentrating poverty, a massive impact on incentivizing and prioritizing public transportation so that we're not paving over the entire city, which creates impermeable surfaces like concrete and pavement and makes our overland flooding even worse. So there's also a really important climate aspect to this, too.
We're talking today about connected communities, the zoning overhaul proposed for the city of Cincinnati. We've already got a caller on the line who we'll get to in just a couple minutes, but you can join the conversation too by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Nick, other cities across the country are looking at big changes to their zoning codes too. Explain briefly what Minneapolis has done and how that compares to this plan.
Yeah, so Minneapolis was kind of an early adopter in this current wave of land use policy reform, which is really hot right now. People, like cities across the country,
so hot right now,
all over TikTok. Minneapolis started in 2009 by reducing their parking minimum requirements. Then they kind of rolled them back even further in, I think, like 2013, somewhere in there. But the big thing they did is in 2019, they passed their comprehensive plan, Minneapolis 2040, which really basically eliminated single-family zoning across the city. So you could build duplexes, triplexes, or triplexes, I don't know how you pronounce that, pretty much anywhere in the city. It also made it easier to build density along transit corridors. So they even instituted height minimum requirements in some areas. So in one case, they said, developer, this 8-story building is not tall enough. Make it 10 stories because we want more density. And that really was like kind of a headline event across the country. Most of it focused on the single family zoning, getting rid of that. But there were a lot of other changes in there that made a big difference in the city.
Well, what kind of difference has it made? Just briefly, I mean, I'm sure we could talk all hour about Minneapolis. We're in Cincinnati, but what have been the big impacts of those changes?
I opened up a can of worms. That's a big difference here.
Yeah.
Generally, what they've found is that, and they being researchers who have looked at the results of these policies, is rents stayed stable in Minneapolis, even as the rest of the state, they went up about 14%. Housing production increased, I think, somewhere in the range of like 12% when it didn't in the rest of the state. And it seems like in some ways, affordability was really impacted. The rents didn't go up when they did in other places. So thumbnail of kind of what happened there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about density. The plan would create more middle housing. Becca, briefly explain that piece of it.
Yeah, density has become kind of an easy shorthand to talk about zoning and housing, but it's not really a fair umbrella for everything. Density, in short, is basically just the number of housing units on a single lot or in a neighborhood, you know, maybe more generally. A lot of this plan is focused on middle housing, which is looking at, you know, what is in between single family housing and, on the other end of that spectrum, large apartment buildings with 50, 100, 200 units. And in between that are what would be allowed along transit corridors and in neighborhood business districts with connected communities. And that's housing units with up to four, or housing with up to four units. So duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, quad
I
something?
I think I may have made that word up, but yeah.
Great. Yeah. You know,
it's
we love
house
now.
With four units.
Yeah.
Four
units. A Cincinnati original. And so that's what's being called middle housing. And obviously that term middle housing wasn't coined in Cincinnati, but it's this idea that a denser neighborhood doesn't have to mean, or doesn't even necessarily mean, single family homes right next to a giant apartment building, that it is the kind of middle, in the middle of that spectrum.
Michael Hauser raised concerns about density during a meeting in April. Here's what he said.
Anytime we have more density, which is what this is all about, density. And you've heard that some neighborhoods like Mount Lookout, Hyde Park, Oakley, are extremely dense already. Other neighborhoods need density, but they are not asking for more renters. They're lamenting the renters that they have. We know renters are transient. They don't put down roots. They don't invest in the community, whereas homeowners absolutely do. They have skin in the game, and they are committed. They help reduce crime.
Mayor, I want to give you a chance to respond to Michael's concern about density and renters.
60% of the city are renters, so the idea that somehow renters don't care about their community is false on its face. I think this idea that renters are in some way lesser than citizens is also offensive and wrong. Up until about 10 years ago, I was a renter. I care very deeply about Cincinnati. I care very deeply about crime. You know, the simple fact of the matter is so many people are renters in Cincinnati because they cannot afford the most expensive type of housing, single family housing. And so if that gentleman really cared about creating opportunities for home ownership, then legalizing products like townhomes or row homes, which are naturally affordable starter homes for first time home buyers, that would create a pathway to home ownership. And that is also part of this plan. We want to boost home ownership numbers, not because we think renters are bad, but because owning a home is an incredibly important pathway to generating wealth for yourself, for your family, and also for your progeny. That's why we've legalized row homes, because both community members through our 2 years of community engagement and also the subject matter experts that we've engaged with both say that row homes are incredibly important as a product for starter homes in order to boost those numbers. Look, our Black population in Cincinnati with respect to home ownership is significantly below the national average. That is a problem that we have to fix. And Connected Communities is trying to create pathways to do just that.
Can I say one more thing? Because I think we do talk a lot about renters on that kind of early end of the age spectrum, like young adults like me. Like, I'm a renter, by the way. Maybe I should be fired for that because I don't care about my community. But I think we talk a lot about folks who are starting out and can't afford to buy a home or, you know, invest in that equity. But I do think it's interesting to point out, too, that on the other end of that as well is this idea of aging in place and folks who retire but don't want to have to move out of Cincinnati, you know, the neighborhood that they've grown up in and lived their adult lives in. And interestingly, the AARP of Ohio spoke in favor of Connected Communities at the recent Planning Commission, and that was one of the points. And it's this idea with similar argument with the ADUs, which is the accessory dwelling units that Cincinnati Council approved like a year ago, maybe. It was kind of separate from Connected Communities. But it's this idea that, you know, an older Cincinnati resident maybe can't afford to stay in their home after retirement, but if they could rent out an ADU or could live in a duplex and rent out the other unit of that duplex, they can stay there, continue being a homeowner, and bring in that extra income. So that is another piece of this that I think it doesn't come up as often, but I think that's a goal of Connected Communities
as
well.
And here's a simple fact, Lucy, building off of what Becca just mentioned about aging in place, it's also for the next generation. A lot of people my age or the generation younger than me simply cannot afford to buy a single family home given inflation and given the fact that our wages have been stagnant. And so if we really care about the next generation of Cincinnatians being able to have access to stable, quality housing, they can't right now. They can't afford. A 20 or 30 year old can't afford to buy a home in so many of the neighborhoods in Cincinnati. And so by necessity, they're renters. And so by increasing supply, not just in some neighborhoods, but by increasing supply across the city, we will drive down those housing costs and make it reasonable and realistic for younger folks or folks who are just entering the housing market to be able to afford to own something.
We do have some callers on the line. Amber, thank you so much for being so patient. What is your question or comment?
Yeah, my question is, what metrics is the mayor and administration using to evaluate what harm will occur in each neighborhood? Why haven't the neighborhood dashboards with the baseline and explained rubrics to measure or monitor success or harm been established and provided to the public and the elected to make an informed decision? And I want to kind of just focus on particularly the neighborhoods with an unhealthy concentration of poverty and that are undesirable, while at the very same time there are neighborhoods with very concentrated wealth, which directly drives where an inequitable amount of city investment focus and services are provided.
Okay. Thank you, Amber.
Mayor, so, what do you think?
It's a really good question. I mean, that is the point of connected communities, because in part our zoning code has led to segregation and concentrations of poverty. We are trying to create housing options at different incomes, not just in some neighborhoods, but across the city. In disinvested communities, our attempt to change the zoning code, specifically tying our zoning reform changes to the incredible amounts of money that is going into public transportation to transform that system now that Issue 7 has passed, specifically bus rapid transit. Bus rapid transit is a game changer because it's an express bus with dedicated lanes on the streets, and the stations are not just a sign and potentially a bench, but are actual physical stations. If we can convince SORTA to put those BRT stops in neighborhood business districts that have been disinvested, that provides the city an opportunity to organically push the private sector to invest dollars into those communities and revitalize those local businesses and those communities in an organic and healthy way that is iterative, so that we are keeping an eye on any displacement that might be happening. Here's the fundamental challenge that we have as a city, Lucy. Anytime a disinvested community talks to City Hall, they say, we need more dollars into our community from the private sector. The city then tries to incentivize as much as possible to get those dollars in. If we are successful, though, because the market is a constantly living and breathing thing, new investment into those communities will result in change. And so keeping an eye on that change, keeping an eye on whether displacement is happening and making interventions is critically important to this plan. But I will say right now, displacement is happening on a large scale because we don't have any competition in our housing market, because we don't have different housing products keeping up with the demand of people in our community. And so when supply, which is artificially capped by this antiquated zoning code, does not meet the increase in demand, of course property taxes go up, rents go up. And we see that when compared to other cities. We talked about Minneapolis. They are producing housing at way greater numbers than we are. And as a result, their rents, of course, all rents in the country, particularly if you're a growing city, are going to go up. But our rents are going up in the mid-20%. Their rents are going up in the single digits.
But Mayor, I think one of the issues that Amber really was focused on was this concentration of poverty. We got a letter about that from Vanessa, who also raised concerns about that, the concern that connected communities could increase the concentration of affordable housing in communities that already have a lot and concentrate poverty as a result. How do you respond to that?
That is happening right now on a massive scale. In order to equitably distribute housing, specifically naturally affordable housing, but also affordable housing, we need to be able to have the legal right to do that. Right now, if we wanted to build more naturally affordable or more affordable housing in different parts of the city, we are prohibited from doing that because it is illegal in a majority of the city to build anything but single-family housing. And so we can have all the gap financing, all of the resources, incentives that we can muster from both the local government and the state government, but if those kinds of housing products are illegal in our city, then we can't build them, or we have to go through what is called zoning variances. And zoning variances just increase the cost of building the housing. They increase the uncertainty of building the housing. And what I'm really concerned about is not the housing investments that are going through those variances, but because it's so bureaucratic and slow and risky, many people are choosing not to build in Cincinnati because they don't want to go through that process.
Can I add one thing, just because I think this was something that took me a really long time to wrap my head around personally with this concept of density when we are talking about these big apartment buildings, because that is what a lot of folks are concerned about. Looking at an example of Gloria's Place, which is permanent supportive housing in over the Rhine, that without a zoning variance, that building could have been allowed by right without any permission or community input to have 14 five-bedroom units, which is about 70 residents. And they didn't, for current zoning code, needed no special permission from the city to do that, but had to get permission to go above the density limit, which what they wanted was 45 studio units. So that's 45 residents, a lot fewer residents than they would have been allowed
allowed by right, but in a design that makes more sense for what the project was, you know, looking to accomplish. Now, that project was controversial for other reasons as well, but the point being that density, higher density, doesn't even necessarily mean more people in a single building. But, you know, are you going to be able to rent out 14 five-bedroom units? Not necessarily. But the idea is that that's where you might often hear folks describe these density caps in particular as somewhat arbitrary, because it doesn't really relate to the size of those units. It doesn't really relate to the number of people in that building. It's just kind of a limit on the number of units, not the number of people that are actually in that space, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks for that call, Amber. We really appreciate it. We do have another caller on the line. Hey, Peter, thanks for your patience. What's your question?
Thanks, Lucy. And to Becca, I say amen.
Hi, Peter.
Hi. I'd like to raise 2 points, please. I was settling back to listen to this interesting program, but when the mayor talked about massive impacts and improvements in the housing stock because of this connected communities zoning change, I just couldn't let it sit without challenging it. And my challenge is, where is the mechanism by which we are going to be able to watch and observe and evaluate all the actions that take place under the connected communities? I've seen nothing, and I raise this point every time there's an opportunity, and have never heard a response to it, even though we have an entire office devoted to data analytics and measurement.
Yeah, thank you,
and
Peter.
And my second point is regarding community engagement. The city planning and engagement department was very creative in creating those games for people to play when they went to these meetings, but those games had nothing to do with zoning changes and connected communities in the real world. They were games based upon the SimCity model, which I appreciate, and as I say, I salute for its creativity, but it really is not, playing those games is not going to result in any improvements. In the dialogue that needs to take place between the people that live in the communities and are affected by the zoning changes and the developers. And just for a quick note about Over the Rhine, this will not solve the parking problem in Over the Rhine. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Peter.
Man, Peter's trying to address all of the concerns. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I would try to answer his first question. We have an office of performance data analytics. We also have a permitting office, and we commit not just doing a 3-year look back, but every single day after Connected Communities is passed, to take a look at the requests for permits that are coming in and evaluating on a daily basis with the support of OPDA how many permits are coming in specifically for single family, duplexes, triplexes, and quads as well, so that we can have a sense of whether this is working or whether there's some kind of unintended negative consequence that is happening, so we can intervene immediately. So those are the two data sets that we'll be closely monitoring. As it relates to community engagement, you know, the Planning Commission is an extraordinary city office led by Catherine Keogh Jurz in the city. They worked really, really effectively over the past 2 years in order to achieve really informative community engagement. Lucy, when you're talking about zoning and you've got these terms of art like setbacks and density, you know, it can be really, really confusing for community members who aren't zoning professionals. And so in order to try to make the information more accessible, in order, frankly, to try and educate the community about what the tools and goals of zoning are, they tried to get and were very creative about asking community members, okay, this is a neighborhood. Where do you want to put the park? Where do you want to put the bike lanes? Where do you want to put the public transit? Where do you want to put multifamily units? units? Where do you want to put single family units to kind of get them to think more holistically about their neighborhood rather than just their specific corner? Because that's the role of city council and the mayor, to think not just about one neighborhood, but about the challenges affecting the entire city. And it was so effective that Catherine is getting engaged by other planning departments around the country to learn from our community engagement sessions. And look, the creative aspect of community engagement was but one part of it. I personally invited community councils to meet with me on several different occasions. We invited community councils to all of our community engagement work. We did the in-person engagement out in the community. We had a housing summit 2 years in a row that was dedicated to connected communities. We had a presence at Invest in Neighborhood Summit for the past 2 years. We created online, innovative online tools with story mapping, again, to educate and to ask folks their opinion. We did online surveys. We also had an online tool where you could put in your address or really any address in the city, and it would list out all of the ways that zoning may be changing. So we really, really, because this policy is so important, we really tried to take our time with intentional community engagement for the past 2 years in order to set up this decision.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're spending the hour today talking about Connected Communities, a proposal to overhaul Cincinnati's zoning code. My guests are Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pierval, WVXU local government reporter Becca Costello, and WVXU general assignment and long-form reporter Nick Swartzell. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk at wvxu.org. There, another concern that's come up with connected communities is related to affordable housing, and some are worried that it wouldn't effectively create affordable housing. Let's hear from Josh Spring, executive director of the Greater Cincinnati Homeless Coalition.
There are, across the country, 411 cities that, when they give developers density bonuses, they require that the affordable housing be included. But Connected Communities doesn't do that. Connected Communities has one part of it that is specific to affordable housing, that is allowing added density within projects that have low-income housing tax credits. But it's important for us to note that we, at best, get one or two of those projects per year. So the effect of that, while we should do it, will be very slim. Connected Communities will indeed attract developers to come to neighborhoods they aren't going to now. But there will be, if it stays as written, no requirement that affordable housing be included. So we will squander that opportunity to get more affordable housing.
Mayor, what do you think about that? Why doesn't this plan include a requirement to build affordable housing?
It's a fundamental misunderstanding of the market, this housing market in Cincinnati, and how you actually create big A affordable housing. So when we're talking about affordable housing and not naturally affordable, it's 30 to 60% AMI. We have in a number of ways prioritized that specific segment of affordability. We've done that by directing our CDBG block grant dollars that we get from the federal government as incentives to affordable housing developers to try and catalyze that development. We've done that by reforming how we do low-income housing tax credits to break down the barriers and make sure that those tax incentives are going towards those affordable housing developers. We've stepped in and been sued on behalf of OTR Community Housing in order to protect them and support their work, in addition to all of the other resources that we flood the zone with. Connected Communities is, of course, concerned about 30 to 60% AMI. But right now, we don't have enough housing supply in 30 to 60% AMI, and we don't have enough housing supply in workforce housing above that. And so as a result, because of that lack of supply, of course we don't have enough at all levels of income. By taking away these restrictions and this antiquated zoning code, and by making it consistent with how we want to grow as a city with multifamily units, we will drive down the cost of housing. But specific to affordability, it's not true that Connected Communities doesn't have anything to do with that. We specifically provide density and height bonuses for all affordable housing developers that want to build affordably. That incentive, we believe, will help continue to empower those developers to bring more units onto the market more quickly. And we're tying it to LIHTC, because LIHTC support right now, over the last, I think, 10 years or so, contributes to 95% of the affordable housing units we've been able to build in the city. So we are directly tying our incentives to the types of development that need those incentives to grow.
We have another caller on the line who's been very patient. Hi, Barry. Thanks for your call. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I just had a couple of questions. It's a little, it's been a while ago in the conversation, so this is a bit going back in time, but I just wanted to get the thoughts of the guests on the impacts of ownership of people that don't live in the area, so on housing and the upkeep of this housing. And also, I was made aware of something in OTR just a week or so ago that as displacement happens, people also end up further away from services. So I wanted to get people's thoughts on the impact of that as well.
Thank you. Mayor, your thoughts on displacement and out-of-town landlords. And I've heard that concern before. Do you have any concerns that making it easier to develop will make Cincinnati a more attractive place for out-of-town investors who might not necessarily have the best interests of local neighborhoods and citizens in mind?
I'm not, because I think I am the most vocal mayor, not just in the state, but the country, against predatory out-of-town institutional investors. We have sued Vinebrook. We have sued Williamsburg. Just this morning, we sued REM Capital, a Florida-based real estate investment company that owns and operates five apartment complexes in Cincinnati. I have made it very clear that if you are an out-of-town predatory landlord or institutional investor that is looking to come to Cincinnati and use predatory tactics against our most vulnerable population, I will take you to court. I will sue you, and you are not welcome in Cincinnati. And that is not just rhetoric. You can ask those other institutional investors, specifically REM Capital, who we just sued this morning. On displacement, displacement is happening right now, Lucy. It's happening specifically, disproportionately affecting our Black community, because it is just too expensive to live in Cincinnati unless you are wealthy. And in part, it's because we have made illegal so many different types of housing. Connected Communities is really just trying to increase supply by legalizing housing. Hmm. I'm just trying to legalize housing. If you're a homeless activist, if you're a affordable housing activist, it is important to know that no policy is going to be perfect, but there's no doubt that more supply of housing, legalizing more types of housing, is going to stabilize our housing prices and make it more affordable for everybody.
Thanks so much for that call, Barry. Another concern raised by some homeowners has to do with either the rising property taxes they're seeing or the decreased home values they're experiencing or just kind of the quality of their neighborhoods. Let's hear from Robert Thomas of Westwood.
I'm thinking about moving out of there but I'm not going to be able to retain any of my investment because of how the community has degenerated. And it's kind of frustrating for me because I love Westwood. Been there, you know, for the last 20, 25, 26 years. I would love to see where this council and City of Cincinnati, instead of trying to increase the density, to at least try to bring the neighborhood at least back up to standards, to the standard that it was when I moved in, because I've lost money and I'm losing money and the taxes are going up, you know, and it's just crazy.
Mayor, what do you think about Robert's concerns about, he's talking about property taxes, he's talking about disinvestment in his neighborhood, Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I jokingly asked during the comment if there was any positive callers or comments, and I asked that because what we saw in our community engagement, what we saw at Planning Commission on Friday, was a lot of support for connected communities. In fact, in our community engagement, a majority of people wanted to see change in planning on Friday. Almost a little under half of folks, I think it was around 40% of folks who showed up, wanted to have connected communities pass. So there's no doubt that people are unsure of connected communities, that they have questions. Some of them are scared. And I have extraordinary amount of empathy for that. But I don't want to give the listeners a skewed perspective that the entire city is against this, because there's a lot of folks who are really excited and passionate about this. To the caller's point, there's no doubt that disinvestment has happened, particularly in historically Black communities. And the city is trying to do everything that we can to drive more private and public dollars to those areas. I talked about the importance of tying the zoning code reforms to the investments in public transportation. And that's why, instead of doing a citywide reform, as Minneapolis did, we listened to our community based on the community engagement. And instead of doing citywide reforms, we specifically targeted neighborhood business districts and transit lines, because that's what the community wanted. And they're particularly interested in driving investment to disinvested neighborhood business districts, like those, as the caller mentioned, in Bond Hill. If we can get SORDA to put a BRT stop in Bond Hill or in a neighborhood business district like Bond Hill along the Reading corridor where BRT is envisioned to go, that will organically drive more investment to that area by pairing that BRT stop with the zoning code changes that will increase vibrancy, that will increase walkability, that will increase the opportunities for housing at different price points in that area. And that's all good for those small business owners and also good for that local microeconomy in those disinvested neighborhood business districts.
Yeah. And that gentleman was from Westwood. We have a comment from Chris Heckman. He spoke Friday in favor of the
plan.
There we go.
There you go. Thanks, Lucy.
This was on my list. You didn't make this happen. I just want to make that clear.
Oh, I'm well aware. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Here's what he had to say.
Our family is helping to build a 5-dwelling apartment in our backyard on Pleasant Street. That makes me a YIMBY, I guess. We decided to build middle housing because it is the highest and best use. We need more housing supply to arrest high home prices and high rents. On Wednesday, I heard Chuck Marone, who's the founder of Strong Towns, he was referenced earlier, he had these comments here. If we want to see bottom-up development and more affordable housing in your neighborhoods, the first serious step is eliminating parking requirements. By keeping these mandates, you are saying that we are more sensitive to the stress and pain of finding parking in a neighborhood than the stress over higher housing prices. I believe that we are better than that. Like the folks who have mentioned flooding, I am also very concerned about that our climate is changing faster than we are. Our sewers were not designed for this increased heavy rains from warming, and that's not some conspiracy agenda item. For our family, this is about protecting the stable climate that we inherited for our children. Cities are the largest source of emissions and consequently have the greatest potential for reducing emissions. And transportation is the greatest source of emissions in Cincinnati. Thank you.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about connected communities, a proposal to overhaul Cincinnati's zoning code. My guests are Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Purval, WVXU local government reporter Becca Costello, and WVXU general assignment and long-form reporter Nick Swartzel. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk@wvxu.org. We have some callers waiting. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for your call. Could you quickly tell us what your question or comment is?
My question concerns Mount Adams and two issues there. Currently, as I understand it, you can only cut into the hillside up to 8 feet, and that could potentially change? That's one question. And then the second issue is parking up here is already a nightmare, and we don't have a very good system of public transportation. The bus does come way up to the top of the hill, but you have to walk quite a bit to get up there sometimes, depending on where you live. So will housing be allowed to be built without parking? Again, as I understand it, any new building has to include off-street parking, and will that change?
Thanks, so Deborah.
The two questions are cutting into the hill and parking. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor, I want to ask you about that cutting into the hill. I also want to ask you about parking, because I know the city's trying to encourage more use of transit. You talked about bus rapid transit, but lots of residents still do rely on their cars. So can you address those points?
Yeah, I'm one of those residents. I've got two small kids. I'm running around the city all the time. And I obviously have a car and use the car. I'll specifically address the hillside. Connected Communities doesn't change anything other than making legal to have 2, 3, and 4 products, housing units in neighborhood business districts and along transit lines. It legalizes townhomes in more parts of the city because we think that's important for starter homes. And it does reduce the minimum parking requirements in parts of the city. We are not making parking illegal. It's important to know the distinction there. We are simply saying parking in some instances is not required. And that, again, is coming from neighborhood business districts that are handcuffed because their neighborhood business district that has been disinvested is looking for investment and redevelopment of those buildings. And oftentimes, as you heard from the caller, the positive caller, I think a couple calls ago, oftentimes that those parking, antiquated parking mandatory minimums prevent those investments from going into those neighborhood business districts, because in order to revitalize an older building, because it was built before we had these parking minimums, oftentimes folks are required to demolish part of the building in order to make room for a surface parking lot. Not only is that worse for the environment because we're just paving more of our land, but it's also destroying vibrancy and walkability. Study after study has shown that there is enough parking in our city, enough so that it's at a point where the city no longer has to mandate it. Obviously, we're still mandating parking in some instances, but what study after study has also shown is we need more housing, and parking requirements are oftentimes an obstacle in order to build more housing and redevelop our neighborhood business districts.
Thanks for that call, Deborah. We have Mike on the line. Hey, Mike, thanks for your call. What's your question or comment?
My question is particularly for the mayor. What analysis has taken place so far regarding the additional load on public utilities for this increased density housing?
Okay.
Especially our obviously overloaded sewage system, but also water, electric service, natural gas, the wear and tear of higher density on our, what I would describe as our dilapidated roadbeds.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there, Mike, because the mayor's got limited time. So, Mayor, I'm going to ask you if you could answer that infrastructure question.
Yeah, so every single development goes through a vetting by buildings inspection, by MSD, by Waterworks, and nothing in Connected Communities is going to change that. Before any development takes place, it must get approval from those critically important institutions within our city. And they are constantly, to use your word, analyzing and studying what the bandwidth is for our infrastructure. But the fact of the matter is, at our height, we were at 500,000 people. Right now, we're at a little over 300,000 people. We certainly have room to grow, and we have to grow in order to afford all of the equitable goals that we want to achieve here in Cincinnati. There's no doubt that climate change, the 100-year storms that are happening almost every year, the fact that we have paved over so much of the city to prioritize automobiles is having an impact on overland flooding and particularly on MSD backups. But the fact that we are trying to encourage more housing typologies will still have those checks and balances to make sure that we're not overloading our system unnecessarily. But I do want to say that we care very deeply about our infrastructure, which is why we are pursuing federal dollars so aggressively and have been so successful at getting federal dollars in order to mitigate the issues.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Mike, for that call. We appreciate it. We have Sean on the line. Thanks so much for your call, Sean. What is your question or comment?
Hi, I have a comment. It really ties right into what your previous caller called about, and that is the capacity that we do have, as a city have for more population. I live in Hyde Park, and I looked into this. Our population in Hyde Park peaked in 1970 at over 17,000. At the last census in 2020, it was down to about 13,000. And the difference is, when I lived here in the 1970s, I lived in a house with seven people. Today, there are two people that live in the house that I grew up in. We absolutely can accommodate more people, but we just need different types of housing stock to accommodate the demographic and household changes. And I see connected communities as a way to help accommodate that and bring people back into the city for the lifestyles they're looking for today.
Okay. Well, thanks for that call, Sean. We sure appreciate it. We are running short on time. Becca, I want to make sure we talk about what the next steps are with this plan. How can residents voice their support or their concerns? What's next with connected communities?
So the next step is that it did... pass is not quite the right word, but it was recommended for approval in Planning Commission on Friday. It is scheduled for a public hearing in Cincinnati Council's Equitable Growth and Housing Committee on Tuesday, June 4th. That starts at 1 p.m., so that's the next chance for people to give in-person comments. You can sign up for that on the city website. Some information about that is on WVXU.org. And then if it does pass out of the Equitable Growth and Housing Committee on Tuesday, June 4th, it will be up for a final vote of council on June 5th. Now, the really important vote is June 4th because all council members are on that committee. So if a majority of them approve, then it's all but guaranteed to pass final council on June 5th. So that is what happens next.
Okay. So the best times for people to give their input are those, is that committee meeting?
Is that committee meeting or in writing. You can also email council members and give your comments that way.
Okay. Well, there's a whole lot we didn't get to cover. We might have to talk about this again. I've been talking with Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pierval, WVXU local government reporter Becca Costello, and WVXU general assignment long-form reporter Nick Sportzell. Thank you all so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.